And then you go back a little bit further past the president's office there, and there's a what we call the medical annex. And you may have heard rumors that there's an operating room on Air Force One. Anyone ever hear that? Well, it's partially true. We call it the medical annex. And what it has, it has lighting, it has stanchions, support areas, and it has gurneys that will come out of the wall, and you can do minor surgery there. We always travel with a doctor, usually a heart surgeon, and at least one other nurse. We've never done real surgery in there as far as I've known, but I know one person, a member of the press, who tried to run behind one of the engines as it was starting, and he was thrown over the ramp a few feet. He was the first person to use the gurney. Also in there, we have a complete pharmacy. And one of the kind of strange things is we have an actual refrigerator where, and I am told this, it's confirmed by the doctors, but I never actually saw that. It's where we keep the president's blood on overseas trips. Leading up to the trips, he gives blood, so we always have his blood on board in case we ever have to do a transfusion. We don't have to do one with the Nairobi local blood. So pretty smart thinking, but like I said, I've never seen the blood in there, but the doctors say it's true. As you move aft, we get the main galley. Now, the galleys on Air Force One, if you saw them in the specials, are pretty interesting. They're real kitchen size ovens and stoves, except they have posts, so when you go into turns, the posts surround the burners and the pots don't slide around. We usually travel with about 18 flight attendants. And what they do is they go out and they buy the food for the trips. And the security for that food is that no one knows what supermarket they're going to go to that day. So it's a random shopping spree. And they go out in giant vans and they start buying all the food for the trip. And what they do is we have a very large kitchen in our Air Force One hangar. And they will start cooking. They'll brown the steaks, and then they'll do all the final things just before with service. So it's fresh, but it's not cooked completely on the airplane. But it always tastes really good. I've had a hard time staying in the same size pants when I started flying there. Desserts with every meal, which is crazy. All right, you move back from that galley, you have a senior staff area. Usually the highest ranking people in the cabinet or on the airplane for that trip, usually it's Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, those type of people will sit in that. Four seats there, they private. Back behind there is where they keep the hostages. It's the conference room. You guys remember that? We started letting the hostages run free. We figured, where could they go? But, yeah. Believe it or not, you can see there's kind of like couches that fall out around there. We flew, one night we went to, it was Amman, Jordan, for King Hussein's funeral. And we had, President Clinton was the president. And we had President Bush, 41, President Carter, and President Ford on board, and Ford slept on one of those couches that go around the outside there. President Carter was so used to doing all those funeral runs that he would show up with a sleeping bag and just sleep on the floor wherever there was a free space. So it's kind of amusing. I actually had the opportunity where all of the presidents came up and sat in the cockpit with me for about 45 minutes. And you could hear they just bantering back and forth and picking on each other. It was pretty humorous. And I tell this story, and I guess I shouldn't say don't tell anyone, but 3,000 people here. But we were all there, and President Clinton, the First Lady was already on the road, so she was meeting up with us. So President Clinton asked Jimmy Carter, the only other Democrat, if he would like the other bed. You know how I told you, two beds in the office? And President Carter said, no, thank you. I have a sleeping bag. I'm used to this. And then when the president went down, President Clinton went downstairs, President Ford asked President Carter, why didn't you take him up on that? I would have loved to have slept in that bed. And I wasn't supposed to hear this. President Carter looked at him and goes, would you close your eyes in the same room with that man? I act like I didn't hear it, but he was my favorite president. Next row back, you can see is a set of first-class seats to kind of sit there, and this is the last part of Air Force One is considered the White House. Everything so far I've talked about on this floor is considered the White House. Those seats there, usually the guy who carries the football, the military aide to the president, he'll sit in a certain seat, and all the rest of them are staff members in the White House. And the way they differentiate on the airplane for people who have never flown on it is the color of the carpet is set from the front all the way to that point. Then the color changes, the color up front, if they haven't changed it in the last couple of years, is kind of a very light beige, almost cream color. As you go past that last section of first class seats, it turns into a blue, a nice color blue. And now that is considered guests of the White House. So when you come on the airplane, you are given a seat. You are not allowed to go forward of your color carpet. And that's the way they segregate and make sure people don't go roaming. After you get past the guests, there's another part where they have press, Secret Service, our own security for the airplane, and kind of area for the flight attendants to rest in, and we also have some mechanics that stay with us. And those are kind of the aft, the worker bee seats, and they have a different color, kind of what you would see on an airline color, kind of carpet, that kind of material. So everyone, obviously, if you work on the airplane, you move forward, you do whatever you want. But it keeps the press very far in the back. Okay, move back one more, and now you see where it says guest section, like I said. And that guest section, same first class seats, the only thing different there is the color of the carpet. Now, does anyone remember the trip to Israel where Newt Gingrich said he was put way in the back of the airplane, even though he was the Speaker of the House, and that he was treated like a third class citizen? Well, that's where he sat, in those first class seats. And I did walk by him one time, and he had steak in his mouth, so I can guarantee you he was treated well. But that's where he sat. And it made a big stink about it. If you Google Air Force One and Speaker of the House, the story, that's all that comes up, is that one Newt Gingrich story. Okay, move back further. On the right side of the airplane is security, which is, it says security, it's the Secret Service is the first line. And behind them is the press section. And in that press section, it's the only part of the airplane where there are no phones, so they can't call up and scoop or send any transmissions off the airplane. It's actually not a very good deal as a reporter to be on Air Force One, because you have to get your stories from the press secretary. They're all pool stories. The only advantage of being on Air Force One is when you go overseas, it's tough to fly on any kind of airliner and stay up with the airplane, which is pretty obvious. But stateside, we don't get very high visibility press people on our airplane. Bad press story. That landing in Iraq, we obviously had press on board, and the rules of engagement for the press were, because we're going to be there during the day, and they had already, they were taking about 3 to 5 rocket-propelled grenades into the compound that we had parked at a day as we led up into that trip. So we were trying to go in, have no announcement, president do his thing about 5 hours, and then leave, and then allow them all to open the floodgates on the press stories of us being there. So that was the plan. We landed. Everyone got off the airplane. Within 3 minutes of the press getting off the airplane, we have live television. Breaking story. They had the whole thing. And we found out one of the CNN reporters had written the whole story on his BlackBerry and hit send as soon as he got off the airplane. So caused us to have to pack the airplane back up and fly south, southern part of Iraq, into a sandstorm so we could hide all afternoon and then fly back in the nighttime to get the president. So if you like the press, sometimes I don't. But on the other side is our own security. We have our own guys that watch the airplane around the clock when we're on the ground. And then the support crew. Basically, it's our maintenance, and it's a place for our flight attendants to get some rest. Let me go back to this slide, see if I forgot anything. Oh, yeah, we can store up to 2,000 meals on the airplane, or the ingredients for up to 2,000 meals. And the reason for that is obvious that you don't want to go out on the local economy when you're visiting Central African Republic or something like that. So we make up all the meals, take all the food with us. Also, there's 90 phones on board now. I think there's actually more. The last time I was on it, I saw a couple that I didn't recognize, and they're starting to do some voice over IP phones. So it's probably more than 95 to 100 phones. And we have 18 TVs. Now they have live satellite TV on board and live internet, which they didn't have on September 11th, which caused a lot of problems for the president. I believe on September 11th, 2001, there was no live news, no live TV, no internet. So the only communications they had were making satellite phone calls on, if you guys know what Inmarsat is. And when you ground the entire airspace over the United States, every airliner is on Inmarsat trying to call their home base to tell them that we're going into Sioux Falls instead of LAX. And so the president had lost all comm, except for the military-owned HF radio, which the president hated to talk on, because if you ever talk on HF, you got to pause, it's not duplex. And he was going crazy, so we tried to figure out a way to get him some live TV, and I had used to be able to play with the TV so I could get the Red Sox scores as I was traveling across the country. And we figured out a way to get, and I was at home during this day and they were airborne, figured out a way that he could get TV, antenna at TV, and they were just trying to hop, skip across. It would only last for about 5 minutes, and they were trying to get the same stations. And I was on the radio, or I was on the telephone, they were on an HF radio talking to me, and I could hear him screaming through the ceiling up to the cockpit, up to the comm operators, saying, if I see Brokaw's face one more time, I'm going to... And I could hear it while I was on the phone. It was pretty funny. It wasn't really funny at the time, but... Okay, just the regular stuff, the aircraft dimensions. It's a 747. Everyone's seen a 747. It's the same height and wingspan. Basically, it's a big, huge airplane that's scary to taxi. Really easy to fly. If anyone's... Obviously, there's people here that have flown it. It's really smooth to fly, no problems to learn how to fly. Taxiing is the worst nightmare. Every single, at least the Air Force One guys, have nightmares of taxiing down a crowded street with a 747 within the first 6 months of learning how to fly it. One of the bad things is in the cockpit, you can't even see the wingtips. They're so far away, and they're such on an angle. I have this picture in here. In the cockpit, just before you touch down, you're six stories above the runway. And Boeing recommends not to land on any runway less than 7,000 feet. We broke that up quite a bit. But we went in, right after Katrina, the president wanted to go into Baton Rouge. And the usable runway length at Baton Rouge was just under 6,000 feet. It was about 5,800. And we went in very light. We knew we could stop the airplane. But one thing we didn't count on, over the threshold, Cockpit's 60 feet in the air. Runway is only 5,000 feet. The last 15 feet, you lost sight of, completely lost sight of the runway. There was no more anything off the nose to look at. So we didn't do that again. But we lived, obviously, because you guys aren't talking about it right now. Max speed, 9.2 Mach, which is, if you fly anything else, you know that's pretty damn high, especially for an airplane that weighs 800,000 pounds. Our normal cruise speed is 8.6, which is what they told me when I first started, but I never saw it, because we flew a 9.0 because there was never a flight that Clinton was on time. So we flew 9.0 all the time. I think we were solely responsible for global warming, just during the one time he was on time, and actually 45 minutes early, was, if you look at this, a couple bullets down, it says longest flight, I think it says 12.4 hours, and that was from Washington, D.C. to Tokyo. 45 minutes early, he shows up to the airplane. Never seen it before. Gets on the airplane, we take off, just like normal, and we know we get an 11.5-hour flight, so we call ahead to Tokyo and say, looks like we're an hour early. Can you accept us? And they came back and said, no. And they asked the question like three times in the first 2 hours. Did we hear this right? We're going to be there instead of... They said, no, you can't show up early. He's not going to be ready for you. He doesn't want you here. So we flew min speed of the 747 for 12.5 hours. So that's why it's the longest flight. Especially for me, the guy who always has to stay in the seat. Like I said, those big engines, 56,000 pounds of thrust apiece. 525,000 pounds is the empty weight, and we could gross out, if we could ever make it, at 833. We did two around the world trips. I didn't do one of them. One of them was on a 707, but with LBJ. I'm glad I didn't do that. And George Bush, we did one. The funny thing about that Tokyo one, we did that, came back, and I think it was about 6 weeks later we had to do it again. That guy that wouldn't let us come early died. We had to go back for his funeral. I'm not laughing. We'll never do that again. All right, any question about the airplane? I kind of can't see out there, but before we move on, usually you guys got questions about airplanes. What we do is we train in our simulators to make sure that we're minimally proficient in air refueling with the airplane, but it's never been done, and we've never planned to do it. If you think about it, if you're in an airplane that can fly for 12.5 hours purposely, there's really no reason to put the president in that kind of envelope behind another large airplane where you're not sure of it. The security that we went through just become to get that close to the president, and then suddenly you just get behind a giant tanker airplane. You don't know who's in the front of that airplane. It's just the risks were way too high when you could fly an airplane for 12.5 hours. There's got to be some place in the world you can land safely. So they've never seen a reason to do it. I think it makes sense, but people are shocked at that. Sir? We plan on landing with 70,000 pounds of fuel, which equates to about 1.5 to 2 hours of fuel. And that's, we call it security fuel. If we land and something's wrong at that airport, we can leave and have options to go somewhere. That day we only landed with 40. So we completely safe, we landed with, it wasn't like an emergency fuel situation, but it was a lot less than our comfort level for security.